Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Charter schools in Ohio are publicly funded, but very little oversight of how those funds are spent. But there is very little oversight about how those funds are spent, I should say. Funding is a big issue, but there are more problems in how charter schools are governed in the state of Ohio, and state lawmakers are hard at work on a measure or two to address those problems. Coming up, we'll hear from two organizations closely monitoring the issue of charter schools in Ohio. Joining us now is Columbus Dispatch State House reporter Jim Siegel, who writes about charter school oversight. Welcome back, Jim.
Good morning.
So State Auditor Dave Yost told lawmakers last week that the system of governance of charter schools is broken. He brought up issues of accountability, transparency, and how funding is calculated. Let's talk about accountability first. What are the problems there?
Well, there's a variety of things. You know, charter school, there's over 300 charter schools right now. And before we get started, I just want to say there are some of them that are very good.
Absolutely.
And
that
do a good job educating kids, provide the kind of options and choices that were always envisioned. Unfortunately, our system is also plagued with a number of charter schools that are not good. And this has been a problem for years and has really caught the attention of folks in the last year or so as there's been some national reports come out really making Ohio look bad. We've been facing criticism. There was a conference of education writers about a week ago Ohio's charter school laws were being openly ridiculed by national experts and because of how lax they are. Some of the accountability problems, for example, you know, you've got too many charter schools that have been able to, you know, they open up, they fail, and then they close, and then the sponsors immediately or the operators immediately find a new sponsor, and they reopen with largely the same people under a new name. So, you've got that kind of problem. You've got problems where the sponsor will open up a school, they'll operate for maybe less than a year, and then they'll shut down, and the state money that they had collected up to that point kind of goes with them. And so, there's just lost state money. You've got some very odd lease deals going on where you've got some very heavily front-end weighted leases and these deals where a company will buy a building, renovate it, sell it to a kind of an investment trust, then lease a building back from the investment trust, and then rent the building back to the school. And if that sounds complicated, it is, and it's expensive. It ends up having the school paying a lot of money to rent a building.
From a company that's making a lot of money.
Right. And Dave Yost brought this up as part of his discussions in terms of I forget exactly how he put it. It was in my story. I don't remember the exact quote now, but basically, you know, we shouldn't be using kids to finance leasing deals and real estate, you know, transactions. General poor performance has been an issue in terms of accountability. Like I've said, there's just a number of schools that are not performing as well as the schools where they are based. There's a lot of conflict of interest problems where you have school board members that were hired by the charter school operator, and you've got sponsors who are selling services to charter schools, and there's a conflict in, well, do I really want to try to shut down this school if I'm, you know, not only am I getting the 3% of the state revenue that comes to that school because I'm a sponsor, but I'm also selling them services, and that gives me more incentive to keep them going,
no matter what.
So there's that problem. So there's a variety of accountability issues that the lawmakers have been faced with, and not to mention the fact that there's just been reports out that say that, you know, kids in charter schools are not learning as fast or as well as kids in the traditional public schools in Ohio right now. And that, frankly, is not the case in most other states that are doing this. And so there clearly is a problem with Ohio. It's not a charter school problem. It's an Ohio problem.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about plans afoot in the Ohio General Assembly by way of a House bill and also the governor's budget to reform how charter schools in Ohio are managed, how they're run, and looking for more accountability, more transparency, and perhaps changing how funding is calculated. What about transparency? The Ohio Newspaper Association, Jim Siegel, had testimony on this topic as well.
Yes, as a member, obviously, of the of a newspaper, I can attest to the fact that, you know, reporting on charter schools, as Dennis Hetzel said in his testimony, he's the Newspaper Association director. It's one of the biggest complaints you'll hear from journalists in terms of getting access, and I know there's people out there who say, oh, big deal, the media can't get, you know, nobody will call you back, so what? Well, if a newspaper cannot get a charter school to answer the most basic questions. Who's your board members? Who's your administrators? How much are you, you know, paying in rent? Things like that. And there's some very simple questions. Then the general public has no chance. And frankly, we're asking these questions so, you know, we can provide the general public with some information on these schools. And by the way, these schools spending about $1 billion a year in taxpayer money. So let's never forget that part of the equation. So yes, there's been a big problem with, you know, the Akron Beacon Journal recently tried to put together a database. They called about 300 charter schools and said, basically we're asking them basic questions about their personnel. And only 1/4 of the schools would even answer that. Would even say who their school board members are, who their top administrators are.
Because it's not required.
Well, it is required, but that's the problem. Some of them, and this was mentioned in testimony, some of these school boards and schools just don't seem to comprehend that they are, in fact, public. And they have to abide by public records laws. Now there's some issues there when, you know, you've got a school board run that ends up transferring all of its money and most of its responsibility to a for-profit operator. Now there's a whole new layer of problems there, and that's something both the Newspaper Association and Dave Yost, the state auditor, has said needs to be addressed.
That's something that's not allowed in many other states, right? That private operators can profit.
Well, I don't know about many, but there are at least a half dozen states where private operators are not permitted. I don't know that it's most. But I also don't know that they allow the setup the way that Ohio does. Ohio basically, the charter school gets a certain amount of money per student. 3% of that money can go to the charter school sponsor, and then the rest goes for the operations of the school. And what happens in a number of cases is the school board will hand that money over to its operator, which runs the day-to-day operations of the school. Sometimes that operator is a nonprofit operator, and frankly, some public schools act as a operator of their own charter schools. But in a number of cases, there are for-profit private companies, including some of the largest in the state. Those run by, for example, White Hat Management and Altair Management, which is also ECOT, the online schools.
How is funding calculated? That's another issue, and why is that a problem?
Well, I'll let your next guest debate this one out a little, because they have a little more focus on this. Steve Dyer, in particular, has a little more focus on this. But the issue that some schools raise is that the per pupil amount that charter schools get in some districts actually is bigger than the per pupil amount that the home school district is receiving from the state
for the same number of students,
right? For the same student, basically. And the argument is that because of the way the state does its funding, the charter school funding is essentially subtracted out of a school district's state allocation. Now they don't have to do it this way, but this is just the way the state of Ohio has chosen to do it for years. Is that you'll see there's a number here that says, you know, your district is scheduled to get $10 million in state money this year. Oh, but by the way, $1.2 million of that is never going to reach your door. It's actually going to go to the charter schools, because that's where some of your students are going. And so there's this concern that some local money may be, kind of inadvertently or indirectly heading to the charter schools. Because local money has to be made up. There's some dispute about whether that's actually happening or not. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I think your next guest can probably dive into that a little deeper than I can.
You mentioned three operators accounted for 1/3 of all Ohio students who dropped out of school last year, according to the Ohio Department of Education data. Those are White Hat Management, ECOT, which is the Electronic Classroom of Tomorrow, and Ohio Virtual Academy and Insight of Ohio. So those three operations. Mm-hmm. Is it fair to lump them together? Aren't they taking on some of the toughest cases too?
And that's kind of one of the cruxes of the arguments here, is that you've got these schools that are sort of the schools of last resort. They're taking these students who are on their way toward being kicked out of school or dropping out of school. And so these are their last hopes. These are dropout recovery schools, some of them, or they're just places that these students go for a last chance to try to stay in school and get their degree. Now, there's also a lot of argument that says, well, that can't be your you can't just use that as an excuse for why all you know you only have a 40% graduation rate. You've got to do better,
because the idea of charter schools is we're going to do better.
Right.
We can do better.
Right.
But they're not doing better when it comes to that demographic.
It doesn't. It's hard to say that
okay.
they are. I haven't heard anyone argue that they are, but I can't tell you how much worse they're doing, because mm-hmm. it's a, like I said, it's a different population of kids. But like ECOD, there's, you know, they've got 17,000 kids going to ECOD, which is, when I say going to ECOD, I mean they have a computer at home and they do their courses online. And so, but we've reported that they have a very high churn rate. I mean, I think they went to get 17,000 kids. I think 23,000 or more students that they went through in a given year before they had, you know, and ended with 23 or ended with 17,000. I mean, there's a lot of churn out there. Like kids who will participate for a while and then vanish, and then other kids who will join up partway through the school year. And I've heard complaints from teachers who say when some of these kids do, if they leave the ECOT and come back to the traditional school, they're behind.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if that's the case everywhere, but I've heard that sentiment expressed. So yeah, there's a lot of issues out there.
Wasn't the idea back in the 90s when charters were first established by state law, wasn't the idea to exempt them from regulations in the first place so that they could just get to the job of teaching? Wasn't that the philosophy?
Yes, that was the idea, that these would, you know, that we will kind of let the reins off of them and let them run free and let them explore new ways of teaching and really, there was this thought that, traditional public schools are too married to the status quo and they're too unwilling to change. And frankly, there's some argument for that. And so there was hope that this by offering choices to parents, by offering competition from the charter schools, that would encourage not only the charter schools to adapt and change and find innovative ways to educate kids, but would also push the traditional public schools to do some different things. I think that now, 15 years later, we're finding that really hasn't been the case. We haven't really seen that vision develop in the way that I think it was originally hoped. Obviously, it's still a choice. Obviously, you've still got some kids out there who are really benefiting from the fact that they can escape some schools that maybe are not doing well for them, or they may not feel safe. But at the end of the day, it just allowing these schools to go unregulated was not enough to kind of push them in the direction that some folks had hoped. And basically the free market capitalism idea of that, you know, some like to apply to economic circumstances, has not translated as well into education. And that actually has been true nationally as well in the charter school movement, which is why a number of states did not, put more, clamps on these schools from the get-go.
Is there any overall clearinghouse in the state of Ohio? Say I want to look up charter schools and figure out which one I want to send my kid to. Is there any place I can go that will give me a good, kind of like a Consumer Reports of charter schools in Ohio?
Well, actually, Steve Dyer, who will be coming up later, can tell you they've got a website that they have established.
Innovation Ohio.
Innovation Ohio, that along with Ohio Education Association has done some of that I think it's called Know Your Charter's website. And I think there is some information you can find on the Department of Education's site as well. But I think that is probably another one of the concerns, is that I don't think it's being addressed in the legislation that's being heard now. But it is an issue that, it just kind of goes back to the whole transparency and just being able to get good, valuable information about how these schools are.
Because another issue came up when Bill Bush from the Columbus Dispatch reported the expenditures for advertising that some charter schools are doing, and it's in the millions of dollars.
Yeah, ECOT, the electronic, the e-school, the biggest e-school in the state, they spent about $2.3 million last year in state money on advertising. That's just there's what
and
they
say
reporting.
Well, we have to advertise,
right?
That's what we're private, we have to.
And I there's some argument for that yes,
yeah,
they do not have a feeder district. They're not based in a one particular school where they get a big chunk of their students. They are statewide, and to let people, they need to do some things to let people know and let parents know that that option's available. However, there are folks out there definitely questioning whether $2.3 million is, you know, is the right amount that they should be spending, and questioning whether that money would be better either questioning whether that money would be better spent on education in classrooms or on their lessons or whatever. Because again, ECOT's graduation rates are around, I think, 40%. And so, you know, if ECOT had really high academic results, there'd be a lot fewer questions about their spending. So, you know, you definitely have some folks questioning that spending. But I've talked to a number of Republicans this week who say, well, hey, they're a private company. They can
do what they want. Okay. We're talking about charter schools in Ohio. There's lots of proposals before the Ohio General Assembly to reform how they are the oversight of charter schools. My guest right now, Jim Siegel, State House reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Coming up, we're going to hear from the Innovation Ohio and also the Ohio Alliance for Public Charter Schools. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Ohio lawmakers are at work on a charter school oversight bill. Action was expected this week, but there are so many proposed amendments that work is expected to continue for at least another week. Still with us is Columbus Dispatch State House reporter Jim Siegel. And Jim, thanks for joining us as always.
Yep, no problem.
Joining us now is Stephen Dyer of the public policy think tank Innovation Ohio. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
Good to be here.
And also Darlene Chambers. She's president of the Ohio Alliance for Public Charter Schools. Welcome to the show, Darlene.
Thank you, Ann.
Doug Livingston of the Akron Beacon Journal reported from a conference in February that Ohio charter schools were identified as among the worst in the nation. How does oversight figure into that equation, in your opinion, Darlene? What do you make of that criticism?
I think it's always important to pay attention to everyone's opinions. And I think oversight is the cornerstone to making sure that the charter schools perform with quality. And we have strong oversight in Ohio. Even the National Association of Charter School Authorizers just put out a report in the fall called The Road to Accountability. They measured, rated all the state's policies across the nation, and Ohio got 18 out of 27 points. What I would like to point out is they were encouraged about recent legislation and policy that's driving better accountability in Ohio.
So it's what's to come that gave Ohio the higher scores, not necessarily what is?
It's what's happening right now.
In the Ohio General Assembly. So what's in place right now isn't necessarily that strong.
3 years ago, things began to shift. And that is what NACSA, the National Association, recognized beginning in 2011 with House Bill 153 that ranked authorizers, which are a big player in the oversight. And then there was House Bill 59 that gave the Ohio Department of Education the opportunity to put sponsors, authorizers on probation if they weren't living up to the monitoring expectations. And then House Bill 555 was passed in 2012, and that's the sponsor performance review that all of the nation is watching, and it has ODE, Ohio Department of Education, reviewing all sponsors in three critical areas: academic performance of the schools they oversee, compliance with rule and law, and do they have the capacity to be what they need to be for oversight and monitoring, and it's called quality.
So you think that there more reforms are needed, the ones that are pending in the Ohio General Assembly, for example, that's good that there are more coming?
Transparency and accountability are the words we need to take a look at. I believe House Bill 2 has a holistic approach to those two terms.
Okay.
Making sure that there's no perceived conflicts, making sure that the accountability is visible and is overseen. And I think the governor's budget adds to those other bills I mentioned, mm-hmm, for sponsor accountability. and incentivizes sponsored performance to do it right, and also makes sure that ODE has an additional rating on that sponsor review called poor. So from exemplary to effective to non-effective to poor.
Okay.
The reason why non-effective and poor are important to look at is non-effective, you can be put on a corrective action plan, and poor, you can have your sponsorship revoked.
Okay. Stephen Dyer, what do you make of the criticisms of Ohio charter schools, not the schools themselves, but the oversight of them? And do you agree that they're on the road to recovery?
Frankly, you know, as an Ohioan, I'm embarrassed that the national perception is as it is. And, you know, the sad thing is it didn't need to be this way. There are a lot of states that have charter schools. There are a lot of states that do it a lot, you know, pretty successfully. And we just have been very slow to adjust to this. And, you know, we can get into the reasons for that mm-hmm. later.
But, well, I actually am interested in why do you yeah. think that is? I mean, back when charter schools were proposed back in the 90s and they started to debate them, and it started out as a, a test program. They started it out slowly and then built it up over the years. The idea was to let them be free of regulation. Don't bog them down with a bunch of needless regulation.
Right. And, you know, again, the idea was free them up from these regulations in exchange for a tougher accountability. And that has not been.
The accountability piece wasn't in place.
Right. And, you know, again, there have been the two largest campaign contributors over this time frame are two major charter school authorizers in this. I mean, two major charter school operators in this state.
White Hat Management and ECOT.
That's David Brennan and Bill Lager. Between them, they've given about $6.5 million to politicians over the last 16 years, and they've collected roughly one out of every four charter dollars ever spent in this state. And that's the hill that the quality-focused charter community has to undertake. And frankly, they're doing it now where, you know, they're standing up and saying, you know, that we need to, you know, make these changes. They're just obvious changes. Why we haven't ranked operators in this state for the last 16 years. I mean, hello. why haven't we, you know, why did it take a dozen years to rank sponsors? You know, again, I think there's a lot of good provisions in House Bill 2 and the budget. I'm very much looking forward to seeing what Senator Lehner's group is going to come up with in the Senate,
right?
You know, I think there is a lot of movement, and you know, the quality-based charter community needs to take a lot of credit for what's happening here. I mean, we're finally doing a lot of good things. The problem is in the House bill, they focus a lot on some transparency issues. In the governor's budget, they focus a lot on sponsors. The problem is the kids are in the schools. We need
right
to focus
now.
On the schools.
Okay.
And you know, what we've learned from the national reports on charter school success around the country is the quickest pathway to a successful charter school sector is to close down the poor performers quickly. And right now, you can be a charter school in this state and fail for 6 to 7 years before you're shut down. We need to shorten that. And I think that, you know, the transparency issue is key. There's a court case up in – I mean, there's a case up in Cleveland right now where they're trying to American Federation of Teachers is trying to unionize some Cleveland area charters. And the unionization effort is being overseen by the National Labor Relations Board, which may not mean anything to your listeners, but the NLRB only oversees private companies. They don't oversee public companies. So I think there's a real and the reason that not just here, but in Illinois and California, and there's been some instances where charter schools, even though they're called public throughout their respective state codes, are found to be private actors for labor purposes. And I think that's a real danger that we need to that I think transparency will help fix.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about upcoming reforms to oversight of charter schools in the state of Ohio. With me in the studio, Darlene Chambers, president of the Ohio Alliance for Public Charter Schools. Also, Stephen Dyer, you just heard from him. He's with the Education he's an Education Policy Fellow at Innovation Ohio. And also with us in the studio, Jim Siegel, State House reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. What do you think about charter schools and the oversight? You can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Stephen, Innovation Ohio has analyzed district-by-district funding impacts of Ohio charter schools. Your organization is concerned that funding is being shifted from high-performing traditional public schools districts to charter schools with poorer performance grades on the state report card. What kind of shift are we talking about, and what would change? How would you change how that works?
Well, it's a major shift. I mean, I wish it weren't, but it is. For instance, there are about 5,200 transfers. And I'll call a transfer the total amount that a district sends to a particular charter school. There are 5,200 of those that in the 2012-2013 school year that went between districts and charters where there was actually comparable data. And of those 5,200 transfers, over 1,000 of them went from a district that outperformed the charter on every report card category. There was exactly one that went from a charter that outperformed the district in every category. So one out of 5,200. There's about $380 million went out the door from higher performing districts to lower performing charters. Again, this is a serious issue that people need to look at, and it's rooted in Ohio's struggle with school funding over the years. But I think that the way the charter school funding system works exacerbates the problem because there are kids in Columbus lose $1,000 every year. Kids who aren't in charters in Columbus lose $1,000 every year because the state transfers so much more per pupil revenue to the charters that are in Columbus.
How do some states do it? I mean, what are the alternatives? Can you give us an example of what would be an alternative?
Well, I mean, we've come up with alternatives in Ohio. I mean, there was a report done in 2010 that said we should direct fund charters from the state. So it's not coming off of school districts'
bottom
lines.
Okay, then it's a separate budget item.
Yeah, it could be a separate. I mean, I think the charter community is a little wary of having a separate line item. At least when I was in the legislature, they expressed concern that a governor could come in and line item veto a billion-dollar line item. I think that there are ways to direct fund them. I mean, they are creatures of the state. They should probably be directly funded from the state rather than districts seeing the money roll off their bottom line every month.
Darlene Chambers, any concern from the Ohio Alliance of Public Charter Schools about the funding mechanism? Could it be improved? Do you have similar concerns or not?
Our calculations are different. In the charter sector, we see the charter schools being funded at 65 cents on a dollar, two-thirds funding. Foundation money is the only money that the charters get from the state. They are not availed to the local levy or share money. They do get federal funding for special populations. Stephen is right. There is a flow through of the charter school funding through the district, but it's actually funding students. The flow through foundation money is funding students who leave the district. What stays with the district for even the student who leaves is the local share money. So as you do that calculation, per pupil funding goes up in the district when a charter school student leaves. That's how some people calculate it in the charter sector. What I focus on is the charter school students do not get facilities funding much. A year ago, they got $100 per pupil. The current budget being proposed, the budget bill, HB 64, is to give them an additional $100, $200 for facilities money.
What about the issue that these funding shifts, however they transpire, are going from higher functioning schools to lower functioning charter schools? And that they're rewarding then those charter schools. I mean, I guess the idea is that they're rewarding the charter schools for doing worse.
I'd have to see Mr. Dyer's calculation. Mm-hmm. The charter schools are only in the urban 8 districts for the majority. And in the urban 8 districts where they're confined, they actually perform equally or better than the urban charter, traditional districts with economically disadvantaged, especially black minority. That was even cited in the Credo report. There are schools that are allowed to be statewide, and those are our e-schools. Mm-hmm. If you take our e-schools and compare them to statewide districts, some of that calculation may be coming from that. But the majority of our charter school students are in the urban 8, and they are performing equal to or better, with minority groups especially.
Stephen Dyer?
Yeah, a couple of things. First of all, half of all charter schools, half of the kids in charter schools these days do not come from the Big 8. Again, one of these, when you're looking at overall charter school performance, every district in the state loses kids and money to charter schools. Olentangy loses $1 million a year to charter schools. This is, you know, not in even the highest, some of the highest performing charter schools in the state, like Columbus Prep. Half their kids come from Columbus, half do not. Even the breakthrough schools, which I actually contribute to their nonprofit. I think they're doing great things up in Cleveland, but a quarter of their kids do not come from Cleveland. So again, when you look at charters that have 95% or more of their kids coming from the Big 8, the Big 8 more than hold their own with the charters. And the question is, is it worth every kid in Columbus losing $1,000 in state revenue so that we can have a sector that does, maybe about the same? Is that fair? The other issue is that you have to backfill that $1,000, say, in Columbus. You have to backfill that with local revenue. And what that means is that a much higher percentage of the share of education now is coming from local revenue. And the last time I checked, the Supreme Court said 4 times that we need to reduce the burden on local property taxpayers, not increase it. And in too many cases, the charter deduction is so large that it greatly increases it, and in some cases by more than 50%.
We're talking about charter school reform in the state of Ohio. My guest, Stephen Dyer, you just heard from him from Innovation Ohio. Also, Darlene Chambers, president of the Ohio Alliance for Public Charter Schools. And still with us, Jim Siegel from the Columbus Dispatch. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. We are talking about proposed reforms to charter schools in the state of Ohio. My guest, Jim Siegel, State House reporter for the Columbus Dispatch, also Stephen Dyer of the Innovation Ohio Think Tank, and Darlene Chambers of the Ohio Alliance for Public Charter Schools. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. How much of the funding piece is getting attention in the Ohio General Assembly now, Jim Siegel?
Well, funding always gets a lot of attention, particularly because right now, in addition to these charter school reforms, there's also a $70-plus billion two-year budget under debate.
Right.
And so I have talked to some Republican leaders who are indicating an interest that in separating out the charter school funding from the traditional public school funding, giving them their own line item, as has been discussed here earlier. I highly doubt it's going to get done this budget. It's a bigger undertaking than it sounds. It's not just a matter of pulling their money out and sticking it in another line item. There's more to it than that. But I have heard some interest in doing that. I think there's a thought now maybe we're moving beyond the you know, the fear is that a governor will simply come along and line item veto out $1 billion and shut down the entire charter school operations. But so I think it's, you know, it, for some are thinking it probably makes more sense. And I'm not going to debate whether, you know, whether whose numbers are correct in terms of how losses. But I will say that because of the way that the funding mechanism occurs now, it does give rise to the argument about, well, this money is being siphoned off from the school districts and being taken from them, and they're losing money. So if you separate the money out, it kind of at least kind of diffuses that to some degree and makes it so that at least you can talk, you know, solely about charter school funding and solely about, you know, K through 12 funding. Because one of the things, for example, you know, you always start a school funding formula off, at least we do in Ohio, with a per pupil funding amount. The governor is talking about taking it from 5,700 today up, or 5,800 today up to 6,000 in 2 years. Well, there you don't hear a lot of debate from the public school folks about whether that should be higher or not, even though most will argue they think there needs to be more money in the formula because, frankly, if you raise that number, the first folks who get that benefit are the charter schools because that's their basis for their money. So if you were to separate these out, maybe you could start to have a little better debates on the actual funding for both sides.
And again, I think the key for charter school funding is actually having an accurate calculation of what it costs to educate children in charter schools. The foundational element of the current formula is the building blocks formula. From like the mid 2000s, and that was based on three elements, and one of those was instruction, and it assumed that there would be 20-to-1 student teacher ratios, and the teachers would make $58,000 a year. Well, the average salary in the charter school sector is $34,000 a year. Differentiating funding, you know, giving performance bonuses, you know, like is given in the private sector. For the highest performing charter schools, so that we don't see like we do today, every charter school in the state would get an increase under this budget, and they would all be like about 3-4%. Instead, giving substantial increases to the highest performers, and seeing the lower performers, you know, not get as much. It's a little incongruous in the current formula where you have over half of school districts getting cut and every charter school getting an increase. So again, I think that there are certainly elements that can be moved here. There are ways to do it correctly. In most states, you fund the charter based on what the sponsor spends for education, because in most states, the sponsors are school districts or other public school entities. In Ohio, it's nonprofits. Some of them have, you know, are not in education, so it's a more difficult calculation. But I think, you know, looking at what the, you know, and this should be extended to the traditional public side too, where we need to figure out how much it costs to educate children in the traditional setting, in the e-school setting, in the charter setting, and having more accurate formulas, I think we'll get a more efficient funding system.
Darlene?
There's something I would like to mention about the payment of charter school teachers. Perhaps it's lower because so much of the operating dollars are diverted to facilities, purchasing, renovating, contributing to what the upkeep takes in a facility, because there's very little to no facilities funding for charter schools. So that operating dollars that's being spent not for the teacher salaries but into the facilities is about anywhere between 15% and 18% of the operating funds.
That is another big difference between Ohio and a lot of other states. A lot of other states provide, well, I'm not sure about the facilities funding, but they allow the charter organizations to own property instead of having to lease.
Right. And again, working that out, I think is important. I do think that there's probably should be some facilities funding because, frankly, a lot of charter schools get in bed with ne'er-do-well operators so that they have upfront money to pay for their buildings. I think that makes some sense. But, you know, that's not the case in e-schools where, you know, I've done a calculation where if they have enough money to pay for 15-to-1 student teacher ratios, $2,000 laptops for every kid, and still clear 40%. We need more accurate formulas so that the children get exactly what they need, and so that every child in Ohio can succeed regardless of setting.
The governor's taken a small step toward this facilities issue. He has offered up a $25 million fund for sponsors who are rated as high quality that they can kind of dip into that fund and use for buildings building purchases. And there also is some other things that allow the charter schools to get first dibs if a traditional public school like Columbus is getting rid of some buildings. Mm-hmm. It allows the charters to come in and get in the front of the line on that. Sometimes actually literally have to be in the front of the line to get them.
For some structures that are already created to be
right.
schools
right.
instead of having to
right.
reinvent the wheel every time.
And I think I agree in principle with that idea of the fund. The issue is that it's based on how the charter performs, and that's kind of how the sponsor performs, and that's kind of the issue. You could theoretically have a sponsor with a lot of high performers and a couple of poor performers, and the poor performers would have access to that fund. And I think it's more important to focus on the quality of the school that needs the funding rather than the sponsor that's overseeing.
What about that, Darlene?
Well, I'm glad Stephen brought that up. We actually agree. I'm suggesting two pathways. One for an exemplary sponsor because it's important to incentivize a sponsor that's doing it right. But I think there should also be a pathway for a high-performing school with a less-than-effective sponsor. They're doing it right. They're getting good performance. Why not have two pathways to that facilities funding?
We have an email from Bonnie, and I don't know if anybody keeps these kinds of statistics yet or if they ever will, but what percent of charter school graduates go on to college? Now, that's information that if I were to go to my public school, I could find out. They know how many go on. They don't necessarily know how many graduate, but they know how many go on. And that's that sort of information that it seems to me a lot of people lack when they're trying to choose a school.
Bonnie, if I may.
Yeah, Darlene.
Pay attention to the new report card, because I think the new report card is going to have some interesting statistics on it. There's going to be about 16 to 18 data points mm-hmm. by the time it's all said and done.
Okay.
Bonnie, I came across a statistic that's very interesting from the New York Times about students in poverty, whether they're in a traditional district or charter schools. About 9% of children in poverty go to college, where 54% of students from more affluence go to college. I find that gap unacceptable. And that's a statistic I actually read about yesterday in the New York Times.
Yeah.
And if you want a citation on that article, I'll be glad to give it to you.
Okay.
I mean, about the closest thing we have it sort of statewide is we sort of used to keep track of SAT and ACT scores.
Which are an indication of interest.
So we used to have that. I don't think that's on the current card. But that's something maybe the state should return to keeping track of.
Keith in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Keith.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Well, we've spoken before. I'm Keith. I was with Columbus City Schools. I was kind of one of their data analysts.
Yep.
And helped with the whole data scrubbing thing. But, and Bill Bush would attest to this, that I just kind of remorselessly track everything I could get a hold of. And I was doing a lot of reporting for our charter schools, our district students that went to charter schools.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very difficult to find out anything going on in a charter school, but I had a great opportunity back in the early part of this century when the Hart School that was in the City Center Mall,
yep.
It closed in February, and I think I had 192 students on the report when they closed that would have been coming back to Columbus District because they go back to their home district and all those kids came from out of Columbus City Schools.
Mm-hmm.
95 of those students never showed up on Columbus City by the end of that school year. And
they could have moved. There's a lot of transients and that sort of thing.
Okay, so you have a school that closes in the first week of February.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think 95 of those students moved out of the district in the following week.
Okay. There are questions about – thanks a lot, Keith. I mean, there are questions about enrollment numbers and that sort of thing. Darlene Chambers?
Thank you for calling in, Keith. There's something called closing assurances. In the charter sector, a sponsor has to work with the school board and the school to help educate the parents of all the choices those students might have and opportunities. And if they do it right, they make sure that each one of those children get into a school of choice. One of those choices is certainly the traditional district, but there is a process and procedure. That closing assurance document can be accessed at ODE's website, and there's a lot of conversations going on with the parents and the students when a school closes, or at least there should be.
State Auditor Dave Yost said that Ohio's charter school system is open to abuse. He said that current law could allow a charter to get full funding for a student who attends just 10 days of class in a year. Jim Siegel, can you talk about that in relationship to maybe charter schools fudging the numbers a little bit?
Well, he went in and did a surprise audits of I think 30 charter schools around the state, and just to go in and do a head count of the students and match up how many students were there versus how many they're reporting were there. And he found that about half of them had significant, there were significantly fewer students there than what was being reported. Now, this was not a high sample, and so they don't want to make too much of this, but it does kind of signal there may be an issue here. And he has argued that, look, we need to do a better job of being able to account for who's actually attending these schools. There's a problem with student IDs being changed, and not nefariously necessarily, but that the ODE has a hard time tracking students when these IDs get changed sometimes at the charter schools because they can't find the old ID for the student, and there is a call for a better oversight of, you know, to make sure we get the counts right, because that's what the funding is based on.
Stephen Dyer?
I guess what's so frustrating is we've known this for 16 years. I mean, this is not something new. When ECOT's first year of existence, it was dinged for $1.7 million because it couldn't account for the kids that it claimed it had. This has been going on for a long time from the inception of the program, when schools were opening up that didn't have bathrooms or didn't have books. Again, the charter sector in Ohio has just kind of had a Teflon existence for a long time, and I'm glad that people are jumping on board here. But this is something that's really needed to be addressed for a long time. We've spent, over $8 billion on charter schools in this state, and only now are we really talking about, looking at serious overhaul and reform. I do think that some of these ideas are very cogent and everything, but I think, ultimately we need to step back and say, what do we want the charter sector to do? And I think we want them to be accountable. We want to know what's going on with the public taxpayers who are spending almost $1 billion a year on these. Needs to understand how the money's being spent. We need to be able to track it. And, we need to make sure that, in this whole discussion of charter schools, we're not forgetting the 90% of kids who aren't in charter schools. So that the funding and the mechanism for charter school operation in the state doesn't adversely impact the choices that 90% of parents are making to keep their kids in the local public school setting.
Jim Siegel.
And I'll just say, I've covered this issue for the 15 years or so it's been going on in the State House. I will say this debate that's going on right now about the reforms is unlike any I've seen so far. There's a lot of agreement right now among Democrats, among Republicans, among charter school supporters, among charter school opponents, and the governor.
Mm-hmm.
This has not been the way this issue has gone. This has been a very contentious and political issue over the years. But right now, everyone seems to be coming together saying, we really do need to make some changes and tighten up the ship. And so... It looks like, we're going to get something done. It's just a matter of just how far they go.
And Darlene Chambers, last word. You said you're comfortable with where things are headed.
I'm encouraged that everybody on both sides are focusing on the kids, focusing on quality education. I hope we're also continuing to focus on what poverty is doing to performance. There's a direct correlation. The more poverty-ridden a student is, the lower the performance. I'm encouraged that traditional district and charter schools are working together more. The Cleveland TA is an example of that, Transformation Alliance. I'm seeing evidence of good conversations in Toledo, and I'm seeing interesting things happening in Cincinnati. So not only reform, and we can all improve, I agree, but I'm also seeing what was envisioned in the beginning starting to happen of traditional and charters working together to fix education.
Okay. Darlene Chambers, president of the Ohio Alliance for Public Charter Schools, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you, Ann.
Stephen Dyer, education policy fellow at Innovation Ohio. Stephen, thanks for joining us. And Jim Siegel, State House reporter for the Columbus Dispatch, thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.